Mr. Gormley, reel 45.
Got on the end of the last tape where you'd got the civilians digging up the graves of the people you found when you passed the prisoner of war camp. What happened next?
After seeing go everything, see to everything, like sorting them all out and getting them all buried, which in all decency, that's all you could do, just try to carry on from there, you know.
Well, as I say, we were. Made them bury all the graves, dig them all up, and give them a proper Christian burial, and set them away. And as soon as we got that finished, like, of course, we had to get on with what we were doing. So we set off again. We went up towards Saltow, which was very strongly held. So then we were given orders to branch out and go down the Autobahn as far as we could and see what happened as we went down. Well, we're heading down the Autobahn, and we had a pretty free run, actually, but we got down as far as a place called Helmstead. Well, it sounds like that thing. That's just my way of pronouncing it. It's Helmstead, and which we found quite heavily defended with 88s, loads of 88s, mainly pointing upwards like skyward, and anti-tank guns, etc. So we were fortunate in one respect, because we found out that the way we'd approach them, we were sheltered underneath these bridges, the Autobahn bridges, and we got ourselves tucked in under there, and we wireless back to get the tiffies, which had done marvellous work, absolutely wonderful, and we were just stuck in underneath these petty bridges, and we waited for them, and overcome these typhoons, rocket firing. God, they took those 88s out as clean as a bloody whistle. They really did. They go, bloody hell! Even us there, you know, saying, I hope they don't make any mistakes, because you always got the feeling that they're coming at you. Even at that time, you know, you say, are they coming at us, or have they got the right target? But anyway, as I say, we went through there, and we got there. We managed to capture the place after that, because you know, they'd taken all, more or less all of the armour and that out with the tools. So we went in there. It was quite a battle, like, you know. It took us about just over a day to get them sorted out, and we set off to go up towards Tostead way, and. It was funny, because we no sooner left there, and we caught a set of 88s. That was the 8th Hussars, and those were the first tanks. We're all just going up with enfilading up, like. And we caught this bloody bunch of 88s, all on the move. We captured the bloody lot. We were quicker on the trigger than them. We just blasted the buggers out the sky, well, out the sky, off the road, you know. We really caught them by surprise. So that was a great boost to all the lads' morale, naturally, straight away. And we got up, and we pushed on, and we captured this little village called Wells, or well, the way they say Vella, but we just say Wells, like, and we captured that, but that was only a minimum resistance there. It was nothing really, so it was just like a little rear guard being left to.
Were they mining and putting obstructions across roads?
Oh, yeah, yes. There was always a way around, you know. That's what I'm saying. There was always a way around. You just stopped. The right corps would split out, the Hussars would split out and go around, and then wireless back, come round this way, etc. But this was only like, that was only a minimal resistance, fairly.
Were there many civilians about?
No, never saw a civilian. No, no.
And the quality of the troops you were now meeting?
Believe me, they were so. I'll tell you later on. Later than that, because we went up to this place called Tostead. This was after capturing this Wells, which was the first village. As I say, it was only minimal, but we had to go in and we branched into Tostead. Now that was well defended, and there was no way we were going to get through there. There was no way they were going to give in, whatever. And they had a lot in the Devons, the DLI, and the blinking the Queens. Three of them, there were three bloody battalions went in there and winkled them out one by one. And we were throwing bloody shells because we couldn't fire into the shells where they were, because otherwise we'd be killing our own men. So we were firing over the top of them to stop any reinforcements getting in, you know. And so that was a hell of a battle, that. And no intention, no quarter given, and there was no bloody after either.
By that you mean that you weren't taking prisoners?
Well, you took prisoners if you had the time to take them. You understand what I mean? Like, I'm putting a little thing in the world, like, you know, because you didn't have time to really stop and take prisoners, because you know. We did take prisoners eventually, like at the end, because the more or less surrendered. But
I was thinking in the sense that the war was nearly over, and your own understanding was to be that we're going to get through this okay, and then you hit pockets of severe resistance.
Oh, like
get to see your friends being killed and so forth.
Well,
it was pretty hard to take.
Well, this was it. But the thing is, at the time, you couldn't do anything about it, so you just had to keep going.
And this didn't cause a response amongst your own people that we'll shoot everybody.
No. It didn't shoot anybody or everybody. I mean, if they came up and threw their arms away, well, then you just let them slide past. That's it. You just let them go on. And just waved them to the bloody back. But the thing is, like, when you're in close quarter work like that, there's nothing you can do. It's either him or you. There's no way a bloke can come up and say, I'm giving up, like, well, there's another bloke waiting to shoot it. You know what I mean? So, but that was a really a terrific battle. It took us all day and all night before we got them sorted out. And we did capture quite a number of prisoners, like, on that point. And then we pressed on again, and we left the Queens there. We left the Queens battalion there because there was other troops coming back from the other areas. And we left them there because that was more or less what we'd say a crossroad, like, and you needed to hold it, if you know. So we left the Queens in that village, and then we pressed on again further up. We're climbing the hills here. It's all like very forest. It's all forest all over the place, and you're climbing up all the way, all climbing. There's no coming down. It was all going up all the time.
Were you subjected to any guerrilla activities after you'd gone through a place?
Oh, yeah. There was wherever you went, as I say, you can say, you never knew where the next bazooka or the Piat and that was coming from. You did not know, because practically every squad you ever met had a bazooka to fire as well, as rifles and mortars.
These are German soldiers.
German soldiers, yeah. They all had these, and they were all capable of taking the tank out. We lost three bloody SKs on this deal. And which we quickly recouped, like, you know. But on that one, it was a really hairy battle. But as I say, eventually we overcame it and we left the Queens there. And then we pushed on to a place called Radie. And that's where we stopped for the night. And this was after more or less the second day of the fight. Like, you know, we'd pushed on as far as that. And I can remember that because that was the first bloody cooked meal we'd had since leaving the grave situation. We hadn't had a cooked meal. We'd been on the move all the time. And that was the first cooked meal we had there. And I was very welcome. I thought, it's the only guy something a bit steak and that, you know. And then wherever you went, because you were coming up the forest, you just did not know where there was a very, this next shot was coming from. But having said that, as you were going through the forest, you were being shot at, but you ignored them to that extent. You know, you would shoot back, but you didn't know whether you were hitting anybody, anything like that. And but then, after that, we came to a place called Darnoff, some name like that. We just call it Darnoff, like, you know. But we come to this place called Darnoff, and that was a really grisly battle, that was. That was really grisly. God. The rifle brigade was with us then. They were doing the part of our brigade, and they were there. And they took the brunt when we went into this Darnoff place. Now, that was another one exactly the same as the one we just left, only more so. If I can take it over, it was more so. There was more of them. There was more of them. They were more heavily armed and everything. Where the hell are we getting the arms and ammunition from? God alone knows. But it was there. It was there. They were all bloody armed. And that was a hell of a battle, that.
Were they young, old men that you were meeting at this point?
Oh, no. They were bloody. They were Panzer Grenadiers, airborne troops. Airborne troops. There were a lot of bloody airborne troops in there. And there was no way they were going to give in. They taught not to, you know. And it was a real grisly battle from beginning to end. Not that we saw that much of it. I mean, we were there, we were firing. But we were doing what we'd already done, firing overhead, because you couldn't fire them because you were doing more damage to your own fellas. So you were just making sure that nothing could come in to get them, and that's how, at the end of the day, it just bloody petered out. Well, at the end of the day, at the end of the night, it was going all through the night. By the time of the next morning, which had fought all point of night, the rifle brigade, great loss of both sides, you know. They had to lose men. They couldn't do any other.
And this presumably was street fighting, was it?
Oh, yeah. House to house. House to house. It was house.
In that role, as you say, you can't...
You can't do anything. You can't put shells among your own men. So all we could do was, like, circle them. Well, over the top, I should say. We were circling them, like, over the top, so that the reinforcements couldn't get into them. They couldn't get in, and the other buggers couldn't get out either. So that was it.
The communication roads that were leading
in the town. So anyway, that was a real grisly bloody battle, that was. I can always remember that. And then when the next morning, when everything had started down, like, we set away off up these other hills, and we come up, and as we come up to the top, we had no clue. I didn't know it. I had no bloody clue where we were. There's nobody knew where they were. You just played follow me leader. somebody at the front office knew where they were going, but we didn't know. We just followed on behind and then firing when it was necessary and that. And we come up over the top of this bloody hill, and there we were. There was bloody Hamburg sitting right down in front of us. We hadn't a clue where we were. We were lost in this bloody big forest. Travel about what? 10, 20, 30 bloody miles through the forest. All forests, and you didn't know where any shots were coming in, where that way. You kept your head down and just kept driving on, you know. And we got up the top, and there we were, and we were looking down right into the bloody suburbs of Hamburg. And as we went on through the day, we made our way down the hill, because that was where we were heading back down the hill towards the mouth of the Elbe. And that because the elbow was down on the bottom, and we got away down into the bottom, and we went into the suburbs of Hamburg, and then we had to stop. We run short of bloody ammo. we're really out on a limb. Nobody knew we were there. It's funny, like, you know, these things come to you and they go, bloody hell, we're getting short of bloody ammo here. Like, where's that bloody ammo here? But having said that, like, when you think of back, no, in retrospect, the service corps lads, they must have done a hell of a job bringing ammo up. They're coming from bloody miles and miles away, and they kept that bloody ammo up and kept up with us. How the hell they found us where we were, God alone knows, because, I mean, we had to fight our way there, and they were still fighting in the woods and that behind us where we'd already come through. And we couldn't attack them. We kept telling them, sending a few patrols out, making them think we had a bomb, anybody like that. We were short of grub, we were short of anything. And then suddenly, after about a week, the service corps found out where we were, and they started bringing the ammo through for us. You know, they got the ammo up to us.
This was the last few days of the war.
This was the last few days. Now we're coming to it now, aye.
And Hamburg itself, did they fight hard to keep it, or was it surrendered in effect?
Well, it was a difficult position to be in, because there's no way we could have took it, and as I said before, the guards armoured, they were stuck at Rottenburg, and they were having a hell of a job getting out of there, and we were up here, the 11th armoured was away down on the Harburg, and 22nd armoured was sitting there in the front of the door, holding the whole of the bloody German army up, if you understand what I mean. Frightening them, we're putting a few shells in, like, but only overshooting, not one down again, letting them over still there. And because there was no way we could have done anything. We didn't have an open, if they'd wanted to, or if they had attacked us, of course I had a hell of a lot of men in there, just the same, and if they'd attacked us, they could have bloody wiped us out clear, because, we, as I say, we had no bloody ammunition and that. So anyway, we fiddled about on there, we're just changing positions every day, so they didn't know exactly where we were. And about a fortnight like that, fiddling about, you know. And I was looking at this rubble, and I mean rubble. God, Lordy, we were only on the outskirts. And I thought, bloody hell, I said that. And that was the first time in my life that I wasn't afraid. But I didn't want to bloody do it, and I think every man on the gun and that was the same as myself. Said, God, how the hell are we going to get them out of there? Because all it was just piles of rubble. And I know a man with a bloody bazooka, he could hit every bloody tank that come by, and he would never get a chance of bloody hitting them. And even if you did, there was somebody else there to give you another bazooka. And we were thought, oh God, I'm going to have a right bloody job here, wingling this out. I mean, if you think of the size of Hamburg, which is a place bigger than bloody London, even, you know, and they're all in there, dug in into these bloody rubble. And funny, like, rumours, they just sped like that. Well, this bloody book says, hey, they're talking about a ceasefire, you know. No way, not with his bastard, that was Walsh. I couldn't swear about him because he needed swearing. That fella called Walsh, we'd had dealings with him before in Bremen and down at Ghent, you know, and he was a diehard fanatic, you know. There was no way he was going to surrender, we thought, anyway.
He was commanding the garrison, was he?
And he was commanding the garrison, the whole garrison of Hamburg, and he'd got them all in, and there was practically a full bloody army back there by then, mate, you know. And but anyway, this was when this General Lyne, who had come to us from the 50, Dave, he showed his mettle, because these emissaries had come in. I find out later, you know, that these emissaries had come in asking for the town to be spared, like, you know, looking for surrender, that, like. And this boss, this lion, he'd written a letter to this general, pointing out to him that if he wanted Hamburg flattened into the ground, he was quite willing to do it, but he didn't. He was not going to lose any more of his men. But, and he threatened him with a. He said, "You felt what a 1,000 bomber raid's like." He said, "Well, think what a 5,000 bomber raid will be like. We'll flatten Hamburg to the ground and never bloody rise out of the ashes again." He said, "We'll flatten it." And the next thing was, Walter had agreed. He surrendered the bloody town, didn't he? And of course we were right on the far end, as I say. We still hadn't. These others hadn't come up beside us. The guard brigade was still 7 or 8 miles back. Still fighting. So he surrendered Hamburg to us. And I thought I'd seen devastation. And even like at the front end. But when they handed the town over about midday the next day, and we drove through it, and we went up to a place called Pinneberg, and that was as far as we could go because it was just handed the Hamburg area over, you see. And I have never ever seen devastation like it in my life. Wherever you looked, there wasn't a bloody wall standing. And it was like going over a switchback. You were going like that, over the tops of houses. You were driving over the tops of bloody houses, all the way up like that. And I mean, you went 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 bloody miles. All like that, just devastation. Swinging back and forward like that. And it was the 8th Hussars, us, and the rest of the DF was coming up behind us then. And
we got civilians about again in the city.
Very, very, very few. Was you saw the odd one. That was all. The Germans had packed in. You know, they were handing the bloody rifles at that end, like, you know. But I didn't see anybody moving in the city. To be honest.
And you just drove through in the first.
We just drove through in the first place. We weren't even looking, if you understand what I mean. Like, you know, it's just keeping your bloody head down, hoping nobody was going to take a pot shot at you. You went past, of course you didn't know. Because, I mean, there's always the odd bugger that it'll take a pot shot, like, and take a chance. So, anyway, we got up to Pinneberg, and we stopped there. And we weren't allowed to go any further, because, as I say, in Schleswig-Holstein, there was a full bloody German army. Had never been bloody touched. Full army, never been touched. And so we got as far as Pinneberg, and we're still at Pinneberg when the whole of the cessation of hostilities was announced, and that gave us the go ahead then, and we went from there up to a place called Itzehoe. And that was the most eerie bloody feeling as we drove in Itzehoe. We all went up on the lake, you know, and there wasn't a soul to be seen. Not a soul. So I thought, yeah, there's something bloody going wrong here, like, you know, what the hell's happening here, like, you know. And I said to this bombardier carrier I had on the gun with us, I said, "Curry, 3 men over that bloody side and get in them houses." He was a fluent German speaker, this lad. He'd been at Edinburgh University and he'd taken German as his second language, you know, at Edinburgh University. And he had said, so away he went over the side with 3 blokes with rifles and bayonets on. And he went in this house and they were all downstairs in the bloody cellar. Everybody. Downstairs in the cellars, because they didn't know what was going to happen to them. Sitting there, terrified. They brought them all out. Rouse, upstairs. out. And of course, they come out, and as soon as they started coming out, and then the other lads, they'd seen what was happening, they all got out and got in, went into the. And soon had a. Probably the whole bloody populace was out up on the bloody streets. wondering what the hell was going to happen, like, you know. But they were still bloody terrified. They must have put the bloody wind up and that they were going to be raped, bloody shot and all sorts, you know. And
how did you treat them initially when you first saw them?
Well, I treated them as I would you. There was no animosity, if you understand what I mean. I can't explain it, but I didn't feel any animosity towards them. I mean, they've been bloody good fighters all the way through. And
these were women and children and family?
Oh, yes, yeah. They were mainly women and children and old men. There was nobody else that there. There was nobody there. The troops had all dispersed back into the countryside, you know.
And was that the attitude of all the British soldiers, to treat them?
Oh, yeah, got the odd one, like, you know. But the thing is, there was a girl just lived two doors away from here. She was a nurse there in Itzehoe. She was nursing me. And she married a lad, lived over there, a fella called Johnny Wallace, both dead now. And and she told me, like, you know, I said, well, how the hell did you put up with the likes of Hitler? Oh, she said, when you saw Hitler, she said, magnificent. You would believe anything he told you.
She was there during the whole of the war.
She was there all the war. She was nursing in the military hospital there, you know. Since I've met him, she said, magnificent, he said. Wonderful, she said, wonderful. He just talked to you, and she felt as though he was just talking to you alone, you know. She said, she says, you'll believe anything he told you.
These civilians, you soon put them at ease, obviously. They became less frightened.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, the Burgomaster, they've got the Burgomaster sorted out, and that they more or less handed the bloody town back to him to run, like, you know, to keep running it, like that.
So was this town badly damaged?
Pardon?
Was this town?
No. The odd couple of shells, that was all. Like a bombing raid, I should say, not shells. Bombing raids. They had a couple of bombs there, but nothing startling. There was no, very little damage at all done there. And my brother.
How did the population look from the point of view of being well fed or badly fed? You know, were they clothed and so forth when you saw them?
Well, as far as I can remember, they all looked pretty well to do, actually, because this was like a town like Hexham, if you understand what I mean. So,
and they weren't hostile towards you?
No, they weren't hostile. No, yeah. Not to me, anyway. And not to anyone, I don't think. Not that I know of. Because we didn't stay there. We just circled the town. The regimental headquarters took over the town. And we were branched out. All the regiments were branched out to different areas. Like my battalion, we were sent to a place called Hydermarshin, which was about 8 to 10 kilometres out. I can't remember exactly, about 8 to 10 kilometres outside, a place called Hydermarshin, which was just a small village. But the thing that, it riled me at the time, because I think it was disgusting, really. We had to turn everybody out of houses. Everybody. That was our job. And we got through the whole of that area. I had all one area to circle. And we had to go out, get everybody out the houses, didn't matter who they were, what they were, bankers, draftsmen, whatever, out. Let them take the blankets with them, and had to sleep outside for 3 days and 3 nights.
Yeah, what was the reason for that? Why was that?
Montgomery's order. To make them realise that they'd lost the war. Make them realise that they'd lost the war, as if they didn't bloody already know it, like, you know.
What was the weather like?
It was beautiful. The weather was really good at that time. It was one of them halcyon days, you know. And we were in this area. And that's when I got promoted to Acton. Group Sergeant Major, back the headquarters again, and it was my job to see to everything. And but that was a very distasteful part. You weren't allowed to speak to Germans.